This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 105 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max.
Hi, David. How are you?
Good. Hazy, hot, and humid here. We've got thunderstorms brewing everywhere, but that's the summer here in Pennsylvania, and I have a feeling the same thunderstorms are in your backyard.
Yeah, crazy weather, and we've got some kind of crazy stories this episode to talk about.
Yeah, and we've got a bit of a guest, our friend from the Airplane Geeks, who comes from outside of the San Francisco area where they don't have these kind of weather problems. They have earthquakes. I'd like to introduce to you Max Trescott. Max, thanks for being on the show.
Well, thanks for inviting me. It's certainly fun to be here with you both.
So Max is going to chime in, but this episode's kind of funky. I'd like to call this episode Guns on Drones. You know, first there was girls on film, now there's guns on drones. And we have another article about the rules, and a lot of drones are being shot from over the last couple of weeks. So it's kind of a theme show. We've got, Max, I hate to say it, but almost 100 episodes in, we're talking about weaponized drones.
I know.
Deliberately.
We were going to stay away from that, weren't we? Yeah.
We've come full circle. So I guess we should get started. What do you think, Max?
Let's get started.
Our first story is kind of a couple of weeks old, but we had our guests on. This is back from July 21st in CNN.com. Handgun firing drone appears legal in video, but FAA police probe further. Now, if you haven't seen this video, it's a quadcopter with a handgun mounted on it, and it fires six times.
Yeah, this was some 18-year-old individual in Connecticut, my home state, which is slightly embarrassing, I guess. And when I first heard about this or saw the title before seeing the video, David, I was thinking, well, you know what? This is probably another one of those faked videos. How can you put a handgun on a quadcopter, on a small drone, fire it, and not have the kickback from the gun destroy the stability of the drone? But apparently it's real, and this kid put this gun on this quadcopter as part of a project.
I didn't have college projects like this. How about you, Max? Max West, as we'd like to call you.
You know, one of my favorite things, the final engineering course was building some really cool stuff. But no, I think the folks at our college would have had more sense to throw me out before I even proposed something like this.
The stories in the press kind of describe different backgrounds for this. Some just talk about this 18-year-old building this. Other articles talk about him getting help and support from his father. I think the CNN article mentions that this 18-year-old is a student at Central Connecticut State University, and that it was a project for school, and that he might have had a professor helping him as well. So it sounds like it's more than just, you know, this one 18-year-old dreaming up this crazy thing to do, that there are adults who should be a little more responsible, I guess, also contributing to this. But law enforcement is kind of struggling with what to do. They're not sure if any Connecticut state laws were violated. Is this legal? If it was done on his own property, does that make it okay? It's very confusing in terms of whether this is legal activity or not. But I guess, David, the FAA, you would think, would have something to say about it.
Yeah, well, they don't even know how to handle this. The other thing that we need to say about our little 18-year-old student is he's had some other fabulous drone stories. If you remember us talking about a Connecticut teenager who had his drone swiped out of the sky and got pummeled by a woman who thought she was being spied on, that's the same 18-year-old.
Yeah, she sort of beat him up in the parking lot or something like
right.
that.
Right,
yeah,
and, beach. And his Phantom videotaped the whole thing. And the other day, he was charged with resisting arrest by the Connecticut police. But it has brought up a lot of discussion on, okay, you're doing this in your backyard. Are you obliged to laws? And if it was flying, is there any different than putting a handgun on a radio-controlled airplane? But I don't remember many people doing that. After watching the video a couple of times, started thinking to myself, okay, you've got someone flying the drone, it's firing a handgun, and you're videotaping it at fairly close range. What happened if something like that quadcopter turned and started shooting at you while you're trying to videotape it? They were really lucky to have this happen, even though it was only six shots. I was like, what would make you think, oh, this is a good idea? Why don't I just watch it and up close and personal as it fires the gun? And there was a lot of things that could have gone wrong, and it could have been even more of a story.
Absolutely. This is, in my opinion, incredibly unsafe. If there were other folks, other parents or professors involved in this little project, I think that's something that should be looked at. The other thing that occurs to me is that the FAA has, of course, as we know, considered drones to be aircraft. Now, weaponizing aircraft, as I understand it, is a felony, a federal felony. I don't think you can do that. Max Trescott, as a pilot, I think you, and as a flight instructor, you know a lot about the regulations, what's allowable, what's not. But I don't know if you've ever had an occasion to address the concept of weaponizing an aircraft.
No, I couldn't think of a single law that would apply to this. And you raise a really interesting possibility that I hadn't even considered. So maybe there is some statute after they can go after this person. It's interesting to me on a couple different levels. You know, first, it's fascinating that he's had so many different kind of brushes with the law. It's pretty easy to think of folks like George Zimmerman in the case down in Florida, or O.J. Simpson, you know, people who've had one encounter and then have more encounters. And you just kind of wonder, is there some underlying issue, you know, operating here, that there's a kind of a pattern of these kinds of encounters with the law enforcement. But I agree with you on the safety issue. I mean, I can think of multiple single points of failure where, you know, he would have had a bullet coming through him. You know, the electric motors on quadcopters, they have a pretty short lifetime, and the vast majority of them are uncontrollable with the failure of a single motor. So, you know, suppose one of those motors gave up the ghost after, you know, 5-10 hours of operation, and it just happened to be as that gun was being fired, and it started to spin out of control, and hey, we might have a dead 18-year-old. So,
yeah.
I think that the people involved here, there probably was nobody who really had much of a focus on safety or had any kind of technical background on the reliability of quadcopters or aviation safety. Because there was a gentleman who spoke at the NASA conference this past week, and he said, you just can't make any regulations that are going to take the stupid out of stupid.
Exactly. Well, the politicians, of course, see this and listen and watch the public outcry, and they want to react. As it turns out, the Connecticut State Senate had recently passed a bill that specifically banned weaponizing drones. But unfortunately, I guess I say unfortunately, the legislative session ended without any action by the House of Representatives, so it went nowhere. But I think that when the next legislative session starts, which isn't until February, it makes you wonder what they're doing in the meantime. when the next legislative session starts, that something like this is going to get a high priority. But now, again, we have this issue of, you know, states creating laws that apply to aircraft. And, you know, is that a within the jurisdiction of states or is that a federal issue? So that comes up again. But, David, we see that not only have we seen some news lately about shooting from a drone, but we also have some stories about shooting drones.
Yes, using drones for their original initial purpose as targets. But these are hostile targets, not necessarily positive. The first one was from IB Times. Shooting down drone costs California man $850 penalty and one angry neighbor. So evidently a friend was visiting parents in California flying a taxicopter when a neighbor's son shot the drone out of the sky. According to Ars Technica, he thought it was a CIA surveillance vehicle. That's why he shot it down.
Oh, dear.
Good excuse on the fly. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, creative. But, hey, maybe that's what the guy thought. But he had his son shoot this down, and the owner of the drone wanted to be paid for the damage. The man wasn't going to do that, at least to the degree that the drone owner wanted. So they went to small claims court, and a judge ruled in favor of the hexacopter owner. The father of the shooter has to pay $850.
Well, that's good, but we also had breaking news. As I was formulating this topic over the last week, something else came up. This case in Tennessee. In Kentucky. WDRB has been following this story. William Meredith, Sunday night, had his police come to his house due to a reported discharge of a firearm. What do you think he was doing with that firearm?
He saw a drone flying over his property, or he says flying over his property.
And he had children outside as well as a 16-year-old daughter who sunbathed. So he immediately concluded that the drone was spying on his family.
Right. So he pulls out his shotgun, takes it down. When the police arrive to find out what the shooting's all about, they take him to jail. And he's actually charged with wanton endangerment and criminal mischief for firing his shotgun up in the air.
Max, when you're flying your quadcopter, Max Trescott, do you always get the feeling that someone's looking at you thinking that you're spying on them?
You know, it's really funny you mention that, because I can remember neighbors walking by, and one of the comments, I mean, literally, the first words out of their mouth were, "So are you taking my picture?" It is fascinating. I think the vast majority of the public is kind of biased to believe that, in some way their rights are being infringed upon. Now, at the NASA UTM conference that I was at this week, there was a gentleman who said that if you go back to the beginning of early photography and you read the newspapers, then the same kinds of privacy arguments were being made then. People were, upset that their rights were being violated because, oh my gosh, someone took their picture with a camera. And of course, over time, we've come to believe it's pretty benign if somebody takes any pictures with any camera. And yet suddenly, because it's up on a noisy drone, people are starting the same privacy arguments all over again, even though the pictures are arguably pretty similar.
Yeah, we've been through this before, but people aren't aware of the precedent that's already been set, the years and years, decades of precedent that's been set on this. And when you read this article and when you read the things that the gentleman who shot down this drone believe, they're very heartfelt. I mean, he believes that he owns the space above his property. He believes he has an expectation of privacy when he's in his own yard. These questions originally came up with airplanes in the early part of the last century for the same kinds of concerns. And these have been dealt with before. But as I say, the general public isn't aware of these things and doesn't know what the rules are.
Yeah, and this brings up the kind of the airspace ownership issues. And I saw a very heated debate by, you know, seemingly two experts on UAVs at the NASA conference I was at. And, you know, one of them stated, you know, flat out, point blank, it's clear and established that the FAA has, you know, said that they own all airspace. And yet earlier in the conference, a lawyer had, you know, talked about two different cases, one of which, of course, you know, this gentleman was citing. But there was another one, and I think it was here in California, where the court held that there was a reasonable right of usability of one's property. And that particular case was up to 84 feet, you know, above the ground. So, you know, we've got some conflicting case law, or at least we have a kind of an uncertain range above 84 feet as to, you know, who owns that space once you get up to, you know, a few hundred feet. And I think, you know, that's going to be a kind of like the old you know, ranch wars, you know, the cattlemen versus the sheep herders. People are going to be fighting where that line is. And I think it's going to be a lot of years and a lot of court cases before that's fully established.
And I guess in this case, there was some question as to whether or not the drone's owner was flying this actually over the man's property or not. And, David, we see kind of an update on that where the drone pilot had some data that he could bring to this.
Yeah, he pulled out his iPad, showed the flight thing, and showed that the drone was not as originally expected at like 90 feet, but was reporting at 293 feet. Also, the drone wasn't over the wasn't hovering; it was moving. Which I got to give Mr. Meredith, if it was a moving target and he shot it down, that's pretty good. but was it just sitting there hovering like he implied? And last but not least, it was over a neighbor's property.
Yeah.
So right now we've got multiple lawsuits that are going to develop. The drone owner is going to go after the shooter. The shooter wants to go after the drone owner. And in the meantime, Mr. Meredith gets a hearing in September about his reckless endangerment, because really firing a shotgun directly into the air is not a good thing, because what goes up must come down.
David, why don't we move on? And we've talked about the case where we've seen small drones hampering firefighting efforts, similar emergency responders. We saw that with the wildfire just recently in California that came across a highway. A number of cars started burning. The folks in the cars fled. The emergency responders came to handle the situation, but were unable to at the beginning because of all the drones flying around. And so here again, we see a case where the lawmakers in California, they want to respond to this, and they have an idea, don't they?
They do. We've actually seen this, too. We had a video of the week where it was someone videotaping a house fire, and suddenly the fire department turned the hose on the drone. But in response to the local things, State Senator Ted Gaines, a Republican, and Democratic Assemblyman Mike Gatto in California want to provide the first responders the ability to take out the drone. The bill's authors say using jamming technology could keep drones away from the emergency response areas and flight paths. Adding the least damaging methods to avoid and disable drones will be used. Well, we've talked about this geofencing, and we've talked about anti-drones, and here's California wanting to implement a law to use that technology. What do you think, Max Trescott?
Well, I just got an update recently on five different bills that are currently pending before California legislature, all regarding drone operations. So on this particular one, unless I'm confusing it with another one, I had made a note that it was regarding TFRs that were over fires. So it may be the same bill. It might not be. But they were proposing a $1,000 fine and the possibility of prison time for flying a drone in the vicinity of a fire. The other one that was really interesting is that they are proposing that airspace below 350 feet essentially belong to private property owners, and no drone could fly lower than 350 feet over your house without your written permission.
here we go with that, you know, who's got authorization to regulate that airspace issue again.
Yeah, and what you put that up against the Amazon model, and that says, well, you can fly between 350 and 400 feet. And that's it, period.
That's going to be a very crowded airspace.
Yeah. I'll say, absolutely.
I can really understand the, you know, the desire to change the situation. We certainly don't want first responders in an emergency situation to be hampered by, well, anything, drones, you know, sightseers on the ground who are getting in the way. Whatever it is, we don't really want to have to, or they don't really want to have to worry about those things, and we don't want them to have to worry about those things. But I'm not sure that, you know, using jamming or technology like that to defeat the incursion of drones, that doesn't sound particularly safe to me either. So I'm not sure this is the right solution to the problem. I agree that there's a problem and that it needs to be addressed, but I'm not so sure this is the way to go about it.
Well, there's a way to go about it, Max. It's like our next story. This was from Medium.com. Actually, I got it off of the UAV regulation Facebook page. UAV pilots, rule number one, don't be an idiot. Someone has actually set out and quantified what we've talked about over the last couple of months, which is, as I always say, don't be stupid, don't be dumb. But I guess the rest of us could go through the 9 guidelines and see what we think. Max Trescott, you want to take the first one?
Sure. Is this going to be a David Letterman type list here?
Yeah.
All right. Then we should do them in reverse order.
All right. Fine. And number 9.
Do not fly anywhere around fires or closed airspaces.
Number 8, do not fly near the president or his house.
Number 7, do not fly past where you cannot see your UAV.
And that's a big one. That was they quantify that some more, that, you know, beyond line of sight is kind of fun, but not necessarily safe. All right, number 6.
Number 6, do not fly over 400 feet. And I guess we mean AGL.
Oh, spoken like a true pilot.
Exactly.
All right, and then, of course, there's my favorite, number 5, do not fly near an airport.
That's a good one. That's one close to your home, David, quite literally.
Oh,
number 4, kind of in a similar vein, do not fly near nuclear facilities, power stations, and other important places.
Which is kind of ironic because we know that there's no way a drone could do any damage to a nuclear power plant.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> But there were people flying them in Great Britain at nuclear power plants.
That's right. It scares people, so don't do it. All right. Number 3, do not fly over people or their property without their permission. And I have to say, when I'm flying most of my stuff, I usually try and fly when there's just almost nobody around. I mean, it just minimizes all the interaction. And, you know, it makes it a lot more fun than to have to sit there and explain or argue with people.
Hmm. Number 2, whose turn is it? I've lost track.
Yours.
Okay. Number 2, why do I get this one? Do not fly if you are drunk or high. Yes, I agree with that.
Or do not fly high if you're drunk.
Well, there you go. You can do it both ways.
And last but not least, do not fly in bad weather.
Yeah, just common sense.
Well, unfortunately, we've discovered that common sense doesn't necessarily show up too often.
Yeah. Now, this article is in Medium, which is a very interesting source of generally pretty high-quality writing. And one of the things I liked about this this piece is that while each of these 9 items makes a lot of sense to those of us who are responsible, the author also describes why for each of these, the logic behind them, almost written in a way that if you are trying to impress your, let's say your 18-year-old college student son who likes to weaponize drones, it's portrayed in a way that might be appealing and logical to someone like that. So I think this is kind of useful in that context, as a way to try to communicate and try to impress upon people who need to be made more aware of some of these safety considerations.
Well, Max, we've got a video of the week. We actually have 2. One was sent by a listener, and one was one I found. Last week, if you don't know, was EAA, the Experimental Aircraft Association's annual convention, otherwise known as Oshkosh, the world's largest air show. But this year, they also had drones. So we'll put a two-minute video there done by EAA showing their drone cage and showing that they were embracing the technology and educating their pilots or GA pilots about UAVs in the airspace. So it's a very short video, but very good. What did you think, Max?
Yeah, and I got to give the EAA a lot of credit, the Experimental Aircraft Association, for setting up the drone-related events at AirVenture Oshkosh 2015, because I think it goes a long way towards creating awareness amongst the pilot population and others interested in aviation. So I think this is a great thing for the EAA to do.
And the next video was from our listener, Tom, and it's Aerial Island off of the coast of Ireland. A lovely high-def video with a bit of a story behind it. Definitely entertaining and relaxing and one with a happy ending. So we'll leave it at that. I don't want to spoil it for you, but definitely check out those videos. And of course, if you find a video, it was filmed by a drone, send it to us at feedback@theuavdigest.com so we can make it the video of the week. So let's move on to, we were mentioned in another podcast. Uh-oh, what do we do now?
Yes, we were. This is Carl Valeri's Aviation Careers Podcast. This is a fantastic podcast, actually, that covers a lot of topics surrounding, aviation careers and how you can create one, how you can position yourself one, and so forth. Episode 87 was titled Drones and Your Aviation Career, and Carl is joined by Ryan Wallace from Polk State College. They talk about career opportunities and in the commercial drone arena. Ryan is a professor of aeronautical science. He's actively involved in the local unmanned aircraft system community. And so we'll put a link to this in the show notes, Aviation Careers Podcast number 87. If you're interested in a career that involves unmanned aircraft, give this one a listen.
And we will, just to give a shout out to us, coming up, we've got a special one coming up in a week or so with Embry-Riddle University has set up a Bachelor of Science in Unmanned Aerial Systems. So we're looking forward to having the Embry-Riddle team on to talk about careers and going about getting that 3-3 exemption and what they think you need to become a proficient and professional in this industry.
Great. Now, we had some interesting listener feedback.
Yeah, our first one was from Danny. He says, quote, just recently got my first Phantom 2 and found you guys. Went back and started podcast number 1. I hope you started a podcast 0, Danny. But he's up to 35, but stay current with your new shows. Saw this on Twitter and thought no one had pointed this out to you guys and wanted to know. And it's Google and NASA work together to design drone air traffic control system. And this was, believe it or not, from Russia Today. It's interesting where we have to go to Russia for our NASA news about drone air traffic control. And we'll put a link to the article in the show notes.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about this actually a little bit in a upcoming bonus episode.
So our second one was from Paul. Personally, Paul, I want to thank you for your thoughts. I appreciate anything, all of our listeners who've reached out to me during my illness. But he wanted me to know that the cops in PA now are licensed to deploy a drone. This was from newsitem.com, and the Mount Carmel Township Police Department is the first in the state of Pennsylvania. Yay, Pennsylvania. See, in Pennsylvania, we have law enforcement using drones. In Connecticut, they have guys shooting from drones.
Oh, dear.
I still owe you from all of the whatever Gustav Whitehead comments. So good for the Mount Carmel Police Department. And we'll put another link to that in the show notes. And maybe I'll try to reach out to them to see if they'll have some comments for us. So again, thank you for everyone who sent in feedback or videos and sent in links. We try to keep up with the mail, but sometimes it's hard. We get a lot of it. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't send it to us. And the address is feedback@theuavdigest.com. Or, of course, you can always go to david@theuavdigest.com or max@theuavdigest.com. So I guess with that, Max, we should wrap this up, huh?
Yes, David, it's been an interesting episode. We had some really strange stories. And again, look forward to more from Max Trescott coming up in a bonus episode. So you've been listening to episode 105 of the UAV Digest. We're really happy that you've been listening. We want to thank Max Trescott for joining us for this episode. Max, thanks so much. And actually, you mentioned several times the convention that you attended, the NASA event. And we're going to have a little bit more about that coming up from you, aren't we?
I'm looking forward to it. Yes, it was a fantastic convention. A lot of people there, and can't wait to share all the details with you in another episode.
Great. Well, find us at theuavdigest.com. Show notes for this episode at theuavdigest.com/105. Now, of course, you can also find us in the usual social media places.
That would be Facebook/UAVDigest. Our Twitter account with our 4,000 plus tweeters is at UAV Digest. And of course, if you want to help the show, there's multiple ways you can do it. You can do it by sending us an email at feedback@theuavdigest, or you could visit our webpage and buy some swag from our Cafe Press site, or become a patron and make a financial donation to help us do things. I got some news today, so we hopefully will be doing something exciting in October, because we were jealous of Mr. Trescott's last couple of days sitting on the sidelines knowing he was having all the fun. But with that, I guess we'd like to thank you for listening and saying this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.